Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, June 5th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, sidewalk cost drives subdivision appeal. Humboldt recognizes Pride Month. And Congressman Huffman discusses wildfire resiliency funding, Biden's restrictive asylum policy, and Israel-Hamas ceasefire. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Yesterday, Tuesday, June 4th, Redway Volunteer Fire Department responded to an unpermitted burn pile dangerously close to a residence near the intersection of Orchard and Redwood Drive. The Redway Volunteer Fire Department is asking the public to refrain from unpermitted burning and to exercise caution to prevent fire hazards.
My name is Milton Anderson. I am a firefighter with Redway Fire, and some thoughts on coming into the fire season. It is best, if you're going to be doing burn piles, to get a burn permit. They're free. You can go to the website and get it. Also, make sure you have water on hand and you're not putting your burn pile right next to a building or any other flammable.
The department reminds the public that Redway and other local non-state and non-federal departments are staffed by volunteers. They ask that you follow safety protocols and respect their efforts in protecting the community.
We at Redway Fire and all the rest of the volunteer fire departments around here, we don't get paid. And we're expected to have the same knowledge and the same training as the paid departments are. So it's a huge commitment for the volunteer. And we all do the best we can. And we all get up in the middle of the night or leave our jobs like I just did. It's very, very important, and training is very, very important.
Multiple Southern Humboldt Fire agencies and CAL FIRE will be attending an annual wildland readiness drill this Sunday, June 9th, at the Community Park in Garberville. There will be impact on local traffic with a number of fire apparatus and training attendees arriving early and departing in the afternoon. CAL FIRE's Air Resources will also be participating to simulate a real-life response and facilitate teamwork between air and ground resources. Again, residents can expect to see a large number of fire apparatus on the ground and the air Sunday, June 9th at the Community Park in Garberville. Commuters on Alder Point Road are experiencing longer than normal delays near construction zones, approximately 2 miles up on Alder Point Road. The reasons for these delays are due to impatient motorists. That's according to Kevin Church, an engineer with Ghirardelli Associates.
But what is happening is people are running the red light. And when you run the red light, it re-triggers the red cycle and adds approximately 2 minutes to the cycle. So every time somebody runs a red light, you back up the other end, the other people that are waiting at the signal system, for another 2 minutes.
The signal system at Post Marker 2.1, specifically installed for the project, operates on a 4 to 5 minute cycle under normal conditions, allowing for the safe passage of bicyclists and pedestrians. However, when drivers run the red light, the cycle extends by 2 minutes each time, leading to frustration among other drivers.
Every time you run a red light out here, you're hurting your neighbors because they have to wait 2 minutes longer.
Drivers are urged to wait for the lights to change as intended to ensure smoother traffic flow and minimize delays. Motorists with other road-related concerns can contact the Humboldt County Department of Public Works at 707-445-7421. KMA News would like to extend our gratitude to Kim Kemp of Redheaded Black Belt for sharing this report. June is Pride Month, a time dedicated to celebrating and honoring the queer community. Pride Month commemorates the Stonewall Riots of 1969, a series of spontaneous demonstrations by members of the 2S LGBTQIA+ community in response to police brutality at the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in New York City. These riots are widely considered a catalyst for the modern queer rights movement. In 2016, President Barack Obama issued a proclamation officially declaring June as LGBT Pride Month. Following this, many states, counties, and cities have also issued proclamations in support of Pride. Humboldt County is among those who have embraced this tradition, and yesterday issued a proclamation recognizing June as Pride Month. The proclamation was sponsored by Natalie Arroyo, Humboldt County's 4th District Supervisor.
In observation of Pride Month to honor the history of the LGBTQIA+ people and support the rights of all citizens to experience equality and freedom from discrimination. And whereas the month of June is annually celebrated as Two-Spirit, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer, Intersex, and Asexual Pride Month throughout the country to honor the 1969 Stonewall Uprising in Manhattan, which is acknowledged as a tipping point for the Two-Spirit LGBTQIA rights movement. And whereas the first Pride March was held on June 28, 1970 in New York City on the one-year anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising and continue across the U.S. and in Humboldt County. And whereas the rainbow flag is widely recognized as a symbol of pride, inclusion, and support for social movements that advocate for Two-Spirit LGBTQIA plus people in society and shall be raised annually throughout the month of June at County of Humboldt facilities. And whereas LGBTQIA plus people are residents, colleagues, leaders, neighbors, and loved ones who continue to have influential and lasting contributions that make the county a vibrant community in which to live, work, and visit. And whereas the County of Humboldt is committed to supporting visibility, safety, dignity, and equality for Two-Spirit LGBTQIA plus people in our diverse community. And whereas in 2023, the County of Humboldt's first queer affinity group was established and is a space for employees and their allies within the organization to convene for the purpose of policy suggestions, networking, and professional development. The queer affinity group is designed to cultivate an inclusive workspace for all employees and is not intended to be a space of educating, but organizational progress. And whereas while society at large increasingly supports Two-Spirit LGBTQIA plus equality, it is essential to acknowledge that the need for education and awareness remains vital to end discrimination and prejudice within Humboldt County and across the nation. And whereas this nation was founded on the principle that every individual has infinite dignity and worth, and the County of Humboldt calls upon the people of this county to embrace this principle and work to eliminate prejudice everywhere it exists. And whereas celebrating Pride Month promotes awareness and provides support and advocacy for our community and is an opportunity to take action and engage in dialogue to strengthen alliances, build acceptance, advance equal rights, and honor the humanity of all people. Now therefore be it proclaimed that the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors hereby proclaims June 2024 and annually thereafter as Pride Month in celebration and support of the Two-Spirit LGBTQIA+ community.
There to accept the proclamation was a representative from the local nonprofit Queer Humboldt.
In a time where thousands of bills are restricting the rights of queer people across the nation, it is wonderful to have elected officials being unapologetically queer affirming. In moments like this, where I have the privilege of being part of this progress, I'm taken to the thoughts of those who paved our way here and the people who carry that work today. I think of the tribes who have tended this land and the natural diversity of life since time immemorial. I think of the Two-Spirit and Indigiqueer individuals alive today and who have always been here. I think of the ongoing international efforts to heal from queerphobia, genocide, and bigotry. I think of the bravery and resilience of our local leadership, our elders, our youth, and the wonderful organizations working collaboratively and in solidarity towards a brighter future. I hold space for the work and people doing it, the people striving and the people enduring, past and present, because without them I wouldn't be here in front of you today. Often in my work in Queer Humboldt, I see people confused as to why Pride Month exists or why we celebrate it in June. On June 28, 1969, a queer bar in New York City called the Stonewall Inn was raided by police. Patrons of that bar, led by trans femmes and drag artists of color, rose up to defend themselves and their space. This revolt, now referenced as the Stonewall Revolt, the Stonewall Riot, or just Stonewall, greatly impacted the modern fight for queer liberation. Because queer people stood up then against brutality and injustice, I can stand here today in a temperature-controlled room in front of smiling faces. Stonewall is why we celebrate Queer Pride in June. We cannot erase the suffering endured by our community, but we can celebrate the life, resilience, and opportunities our queer ancestors and transcestors have gifted us. We continue to devote ourselves to intersectional liberations and living in our truths, not just in honor of us, and not only in reverence of those who have come before, but also for the future generations that are yet to come. Queer teachings inspire, guide, and drive our community forward. We continue to work towards a brighter future where everyone is free to love and express their authentic selves, not just in Humboldt, but everywhere. I would like to ask everyone hearing me now to practice today. Practice accepting the parts of yourself that might seem queer. Practice compassion towards your fellow community members, and practice nourishing yourself with hope and joy. Do this for yourself, your ancestors, and the people who will call you ancestors. Thank you.
Supervisor Natalie Arroyo and Supervisor Michelle Bushnell will be joining KMUD and Queer Humboldt at Southern Humboldt Pride June 22nd, speaking on one of our panels. Southern Humboldt Pride is a free all-ages community celebration taking place at the Mateel Community Center at 59 Rusk Lane in Redway. SoHum Pride will feature art, live music, drag, vendors, and a kid zone. Bands include Sequoia Rose, Redwood Revolution, Hill Honey and the Wildcats, Hannah Marie of the Black Banjo Reclamation Project, and the Lost Coast Flow Fusion Fire Dancers. This year's theme is Country Queer, and libations will be served by the Box Bar. The event is all ages from 1 to 9 p.m. and will feature an 18 and older after party at the Mateel from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. All proceeds from this event will support Redwood Community Radio. You can learn more at kmud.org. In addition, other Pride Month events include a Summer Pride celebration on June 8th, hosted by Redwood Pride from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. A parade march starts at the Adorney Center at 11 a.m., ending at the Jefferson Center. From noon to 4 p.m., you can enjoy booths, vendors, and more. There will be all-ages drag show from 5 to 7 p.m. and an 18-plus show at Synapsis. On June 30th, there will be the 4th Annual Ferndale Pride, where attendees will walk down Main Street in the Victorian village of Ferndale with a festival at Fireman's Park. Folks can gather at the old steeple in Ferndale at 11 a.m. with a march beginning at noon. That event is hosted by Lost Coast Pride. To see all of the Pride events calendar, you can visit queerhumboldt.org. Housing affordability issues were considered by Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors in a subdivision appeal hearing. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
The cost of installing sidewalks works against housing affordability, but in a hearing of an appeal of a McKinleyville subdivision sidewalk requirement, the Board of Supervisors found a way to serve both interests. Compromise was forged as supervisors took up the appeal at their May 21st meeting. Robert Sutter, the appellant, is subdividing a 2.2-acre parcel at the intersection of Sutter Road and Azalea Avenue into four lots. He challenged the County Planning Commission's denial of his request to have a sidewalk requirement waived. The cost of sidewalks is a dilemma in an era where housing supply and demand is heavily tilted toward demand. Supervisor Steve Madrone generally supports sidewalks, but he noted the Sutter subdivision scale and said the McKinleyville Community Plan allows alternatives.
This is a project where the sidewalk development is a substantial expense on a pretty small development. And if you're putting in sidewalks like for the Blackbird Avenue and the rest of it, where, as you said, there's 58 or so parcels, then that cost gets spread out over a very large area. In this case, it's a large expense over a small area. And I noted in MCCP 4230, it states a couple of things. One was sidewalks or off-street pedestrian ways. So there is an option there, and I suggested to the developer that it might be okay, depending on what this board feels about it, that it this rather than the very, very expensive curb, gutter, and sidewalk, still an important thing would be a pedestrian access way next to the road.
There would be commentary questioning the need for a sidewalk, on the segment of Azalea Avenue which isn't in the county road system. There are 68 other parcels in the neighborhood, but Sutter said a sidewalk requirement should be proportional to the size of his subdivision.
So I just want us to remember that. It's not the need of the 68 other parcels that is to be considered here. It's the need generated by this project. And we've already decided that these infill projects are valuable to our community. They are the way we want to meet our housing need. We have a housing need. We want to meet that. So with that, I think the salient component we come back to is this balancing of the equities. Are we going to demand a sidewalk that doesn't proportionally respond to this need of the four parcels?
The supervisor's discussion included general commentary about urban planning and walkability, as reflected in this exchange between Planning Director John Ford and Board Chair Rex Bone.
There has been a lot of discussion about the cost of sidewalks, and the Planning Commission undertook a very lengthy discussion about this a couple years ago in terms of trying to have housing get built and housing be affordable. It's not an unreasonable discussion to have in terms of the sidewalks. But then the trade-off is, if we want to encourage people to be able to walk and feel safe walking, there needs to be safe places for them to walk.
I agree with you, and I've been, you know, for quite a while, but I walk in the mornings and stuff when it's dark on Walnut and stuff like that. And I don't have very many sidewalks. I have a bicycle lane on a major thoroughfare that gets a lot of people walking on it. I mean, I actually see numerous people bicycling and walking on it, so. And majority has no sidewalks, so.
Sutter said installing a sidewalk would probably cost in the range of $200,000 to $250,000, and that would make the subdivision undoable. Supervisors focused on other options. There was talk of having a separated crushed granite path in lieu of a sidewalk, but Supervisor Natalie Arroyo recalled the curb, gutter, and sidewalk wars of the past, where the higher maintenance needs of granite paths figured into debates. She suggested a separated asphalt path at grade with the roadway. Supervisors supported that and required it instead of the sidewalk in a unanimous vote. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, activists call for Governor Newsom not to cut acupuncture treatment from Medi-Cal. Ibi Tasquier reports.
On May 10th, Governor Gavin Newsom revised his budget proposal for the next fiscal year to try and close an estimated $27.6 billion budget deficit. Newsom has proposed cutting some social service spending. Lily Chiao is the director of integrative medicine and a licensed acupuncturist and herbalist at Northeast Medical Services, or NEMS, in San Francisco. At a news conference protesting the cuts Thursday in Chinatown, she said more than 90% of the health center's patients are on Medi-Cal and will lose the acupuncture treatments they rely on under the proposed cuts.
Acupuncture, we all know, is a managed chronic pain and also reducing anxiety and depressions. And think about it, in the society, if the patients are going to have chronic pain, they're going to be taking more medication, pain medications, or addictions, or opiates. So that it can lead in a huge the crisis right now we are facing as an opiate crisis and over drug overdose.
Molly Bekele has been a patient at NEMS for the past year. She's a Medi-Cal recipient and said that the treatments have worked far better than the painkillers and anxiety medication she was previously prescribed.
And the thought of not having access to it I don't really want to go back on medications. That feels more pricey in terms of everything, like in terms of the dollar and in terms of my lifestyle and my health. It just feels more pricey, and this is something that really I have access to and gives me so much relief.
Lily Chia with NEMS said the proposed cuts will have a big impact on the Chinese community in San Francisco and elsewhere in the state.
I feel like this is going to be targeting the AAPI community, sort of. The reason because the acupuncture as the one of the practice of AAPI, this is a culture more sensitive awareness. And if they're cutting it, you know, a lot of our AAPI community that will be suffer more.
Board of Supervisors President Aaron Peskin announced Thursday that he would introduce a resolution at the Board of Supervisors urging Governor Newsom to reconsider his proposal to cut acupuncture benefits from Medi-Cal recipients. The API Legislative Caucus has also submitted a letter to the governor asking him to reconsider. The state must finalize a budget by June 15th. For KPFA News, I'm Abby Tasquier.
In national news, KMUD got an opportunity to speak with our representative for the North Coast, Congressman Jared Huffman, in this interview. Good afternoon, Congressman Huffman, and thank you for checking in with KMUD.
Yes, hi, Lauren.
As always, there is a lot to discuss, and I'm hoping to begin close to home with some positive news. As you recently announced that nearly $19 million is being allocated to your district for wildfire defense and resiliency. Can you elaborate on how this funding will be utilized?
Yeah, so I'm excited about that too. A good chunk of it in Trinity County. And, you know, Trinity has just been so hammered by major wildfires the whole time I've been in Congress, all 12 years. We've had several come through. The conditions are, going to be worrisome here in the months ahead. So the more proactive treatment we can do, the better. And Trinity also has something going for it. It has a forest collaborative with lots of stakeholders that have been looking very thoughtfully at strategies and projects that would really bring resilience in forest health and help start to turn the corner on this terrible fire reality that they've been living through. I don't want that to be the new normal where, you know, entire school districts have to cancel class because they can't breathe the air, where people are evacuated constantly and just live in fear of being wiped out. So this is an attempt to get ahead of it. It's a good investment in that direction. I'm excited about it.
Cannabis remains a significant topic for your constituents within the Emerald Triangle, and I was hoping you could briefly share your thoughts on reclassifying marijuana under federal law and whether this might pave the way for legalization.
Well, my view is it's about time. I think we have been kind of stuck in the 19th century for way too long on cannabis. And yet, even as we've begun to, decriminalize at the state level and make progress, there's these disconnects with federal law. That the schedule, the Controlled Substances Act schedule, is probably the biggest one. And it shouldn't have taken all this time to reschedule cannabis and stop treating it like, you know, heroin and the worst possible substances. But we're finally there, and it's starting to happen. And now we can go to work on other disconnects where lawful California cannabis businesses can't, you know, do banking and use the postal service. You know, once we get rescheduling, we can clean up all of those other things and start lifting up this legal industry in a way that pushes out the black market and all of the cash and the money laundering and the crime and things that I think good operators in this space want to be done with.
Last time we spoke, the jury had just begun their deliberations in Donald Trump's criminal trial. And since then, he has been convicted on all 34 counts. What are the implications for our country and the upcoming presidential election?
Yeah, I don't know how it affects the election, Lauren. There's a lot of speculation about that. And all I know is I feel like it validates the rule of law. The idea that he would have somehow got away with something that's so obviously illegal. When this whole hush money scandal first came to light back in 2018, I wrote a letter to the Department of Justice urging them to open a criminal investigation because the facts were just so obvious. This guy was circumventing federal campaign laws. And, the wheels of justice turn slowly, but they turn. And the fact that we're here with this overwhelming conviction from a jury that took its work very seriously, a very respected jurist, and a process that worked, you know, it gives me, you know, restores some of my faith, I think, in that the rule of law is still with us, still working.
This story is still unfolding in real time and we'll continue to track and update. But I want to move to our southern border where President Biden issued an executive order restricting asylum. This is considered one of the most restrictive immigration policies ever declared by a recent Democratic administration, and national news outlets are likening it to Donald Trump's 2017 policy, which Biden promised to revoke. I'm hoping to get your perspective on this.
Well, you know, when I hear those characterizations, it's a great example of how, you know, there's sort of the echo chamber of how things get spun and characterized, and I guess headline writers kind of live in this space, and then there's the reality. And if you take the time to actually read the details and to ask people that work in this space, what does it mean? What's different? It is remarkably little. And what this basically amounts to is that people who show up at the border and simply shout the words, "I have a credible fear," are going to be treated just the way they were before this executive order. It's called it literally, I think, the shout test. But they have to sort of announce their credible fear proactively. And if they can do that, it's going to be very little change. If they don't do that, yeah, you're right. They will not be processed in the same way. But it's not the Remain in Mexico policy that Trump had. It's not family separation. It's not any of these draconian things. And I just have to marvel at some of the ways it's being characterized.
I'm wondering if you have an opinion on Mexico's newly elected president, Claudia Sheinbaum, who is an environmental scientist and actually completed her PhD in Berkeley.
I know. Isn't that awesome? Look, I'm trying not to get too excited about it because I love the fact that Mexico elected a woman. I love the fact that she's a climate scientist. And she's a Jewish woman, I believe. So there's just all kinds of things I like about it. She seems to favor renewables and a transition from their state-owned fossil fuel enterprises into clean energy companies. So, you know, what's not to like about all of that? My hope also is that she will, I think she ran against corruption and cartels, and that's the other big problem with Mexico these days. It's kind of a narco state. The cartels have just had so much influence, and it spills out into this immigration issue you and I were talking about with the southern border. So I hope it's a reset. I hope she has the power and the fortitude to do a reset. And, you know, I hope President Biden reaches out and sees this as an opportunity for a reset, because if we had a partner in Mexico with the authority and, you know, the public imprimatur and political capital to really make major changes, we could solve so many problems together, from climate to immigration to the quality of life in Central and the Mexican part of North America. It's an important moment.
And finally, on Friday, President Biden announced a, quote, roadmap to an enduring ceasefire, which consisted of three different phases. Will this be an effective roadmap to push both Netanyahu and Hamas towards a deal?
I'm sure hoping it is, Lauren. I feel like it's the best hope we've got at this point. I love the fact that President Biden really put the full weight of his office behind it, endorsing it, committing to put pressure on all parties to get to yes around this framework. And the fact that at least some parts of the Israeli government seem to say that it could work. You know, I see the cracks, the conservative side of Netanyahu's government, you know, calling it surrender, saying they won't support it. Others saying that they need it and they do support it. So I'm just crossing my fingers. You know, hope is not a plan, as they say. So I'm sure that if this fails and if the conflict continues to unfold, I'll have really tough decisions to make, and we'll have to think about what comes next. But right now, I'm just very much supporting what President Biden is trying to do with that ceasefire plan and hoping we get to yes.
Anything else you'd like to leave us with today, Congressman Huffman?
That's a lot. You know what? I will leave you with one thing. I want to compliment you because I do a lot of interviews, and rarely do I run into someone who has thought out as much as you always do really important, timely questions about issues of the day. It makes it a lot of fun to have these conversations, and I appreciate you.
Again, that was our representative for the North Coast, Congressman Jared Huffman. If you have a question you would like asked, you can email news@kmud.org. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, I.B. Taskier and Daniel Mintz. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.